tonight on a very special episode of the Co-Opticast.
Co-Optimus.com presents the Co-Opticast.
All right, welcome back to another Co-Opticast. I believe this is 27, but we won't number this because it's a very special Co-Opticast, as you've heard already. It's the Co-Opticast for Sunday, September the 6th, 2009. And there's four of the Co-Opti crew here. And I think this is the first time us four have been on a show together. Mm-hmm. So we got Kat, Jim, and Jason here, and myself, Nick. And we've all just survived a onslaught of what's the word I'm looking for?
Material games.
Stimulation.
Nergasms. I think it was.
Yes. Yes.
We did it for you.
That's right, yes. So we're gonna talk a bit about what we saw, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll talk about how Kat broke Seattle successfully. And so let's start with our Thursdays. We arrived here on a Thursday. And myself, I went to a event on Microsoft's campus. They held a exclusive kind of community event where they invited about 100 people from some of the smaller sites. No IGNs or GameSpots or those people were there, but instead they focused on their community sites and even forum members and stuff like that. And we got the chance to get our hands on basically everything that they had on the show floor. So I got to play Halo 3 ODST, got to play Borderlands. Got to see Mass Effect 2. They had a bunch of Xbox Live Arcade games on display. Left 4 Dead 2, Beatles Rock Band. There's a lot of stuff. But before we got to play all that stuff, we actually got a tour of their new entertainment division's campus. And it's this beautiful, like, four-building campus. There's a soccer field. There's a volleyball court. There's all these restaurants. They have a salon, an art gallery. It's like, it makes me jealous that I get to stare at four walls and fluorescent lights all day, basically. So that was really nice. Like I said, I'll talk more about the impressions of the games later. But Jim and Jason, they got to go get their hands on Army of Two: The 40th Day. And I guess Jim, you want to go first? What you guys saw?
Yeah, I remember when I first flew in and went and checked in at the hotel. I got a call from Jason, and he said, "How fast can you be over here? We've got an interview." And that's when it really clicked that I was in the middle of something pretty big. I was pretty excited. I didn't get there in time for the interview, but I did get there right after. I got to meet Jason for the first time, and then we just waded in waist deep, got our hands on it, met the team, and I got to see some really interesting stuff. They had everything set up to where two people could sit side by side and play the game, and they could load it up from the beginning for you. They could jump ahead, which they actually did for us at one point, and we just basically got to play around with all the stuff that they had unlocked for that particular demo. Pretty impressed by what we saw, and I think I'll let Jason carry away his impressions, because I remember him mentioning that he hadn't really had an interest in it compared to the first one.
I played, and I told this to pretty much most of the other two guys. I said, "Look, I played the demo, and it was fun, and I know that a lot of people on our site liked it." I said, "But I just never played the full thing, so this was my first time diving into the game, and I didn't have much interest in it." And after picking it up and after playing it some, particularly playing it co-op, I'm really kind of now excited about this game. And what shows most of all with this, and talking with Matt Turner, who's the producer on this, and a bunch of the other folks there from EA Montreal, is that they love co-op, and they wanted to actually build upon the co-op and have more co-op in this game. And so one of the things we posted about this earlier last week or late last week, whatever it is, that this idea of organic co-op. So, you know, there's the step jump, there's the back-to-backs, there's things like that from the first game, but there was all scripted events. And the producer just said, you know, we got a lot of feedback, and we heard, and we found that people just didn't like that. They wanted to be able to do those moves. They wanted to, you know, do them whenever and wherever they kind of wanted to do it. So they have, and they've opened that whole thing up to you know, if you're in there and you're playing the game and you want to do a back-to-back moment, at that point in time, you can do a back-to-back moment. And they call it the co-op playbook, which I kind of like, that they were trying to develop this whole thing of moves that was co-op focused. And it's really kind of smart as well. Something that wasn't brought up in the interview, and I'm hoping to post later about, was that they're making the AI like a lot more interactive as well, like your co-op partner. It's not going to be someone who just runs into a wall or shoots you in the back because there's an enemy on the other side of you and they just don't know where to aim. Like, you can issue commands to your AI buddy and have them sort of control and feel the same way that you would if you're actually playing with a person. And that, in addition to that, was the weapon customization, which was kind of, it's nice, one of those like little small subtle things of, you can build out your own weapon, and Jim, I think, was a little bit hesitant about this, but also then got a little bit excited once they started demoing it.
I was giddy. They said that they built every weapon from the receiver on out. Well, it's mainly talking about like your assault rifles and things, and then you could swap out the barrels, the magazines. You could take the HK-G36 receiver and put a full AK-47 setup, or mix and match whatever you wanted. I want to go back to the AI really quick because there was something that I don't believe we mentioned in our hands-on. So only the listeners are going to catch wind of this right now, but the enemy AI is programmed in a way that they can do everything that you can. You'll shoot one, an enemy, and knock him down, and his teammate will come over, grab him by the collar, and haul him to safety while he's firing on you exactly the way that you do together from the first game. They can take cover, they can blind fire, they can vault their cover, everything like you can.
They can grab riot shields or whatever off the wall, and they can two-man that, so one AI has it, the other guy's backing them up, shooting over it. Yeah, I mean, that was something else, is that they wanted to give the enemies the same move, so it's really like you're facing off square to square with a group of people that had the same thing. With the weapon customization, jumping back to that again, was that the idea, the other behind that they kept on tossing out when they described it, was like, it's inherently co-op. You need to build, you need to work with your partner so that you're not both like, you can't, you know, you can make the same guns, you can run through it and do it that way, but it works a lot better if, you know, one person has a shotgun and they're going to be a close range kind of guy, and one person builds out like a sniper rifle, and you're able to cover each other that way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just there was a lot of thought that they put into it. They obviously learned a lot from the first one and hearing back from the community. And the play style, and we kind of, I think this was said in the impressions, it plays like a Gears of War, which is good. I mean, it's a good control scheme. It works out really well for this game. And yeah, I mean, I'm definitely excited about it.
Also, real quick, too, about the co-op loadouts, they didn't want to sacrifice those moments of where you could do the co-op sniping and everything. So this time around, you're going to have a main weapon, a sidearm, and a special weapon, which can be an explosive, a sniper rifle, etc., something that you wouldn't normally wield when you're just running around, which is different from the first one, because I believe in the first one you can only take two weapons.
For sure, yeah. Cool. All right, so after Thursday, Friday was the day that the show floor opened, and the press got in about an hour and a half early. I know we all kind of just ran in like a kid in a toy store, trying to get our hands on stuff. What was the first thing that you guys wanted to, like, we'll start with Kat. What was the first thing that you wanted to go see as soon as the doors opened? Like,
as soon as I noticed the play logic with Fairy Tail Fights, I completely gravitated towards them and started talking and playing and asking questions in general, and it was just a lot of fun. Like, and then I just kind of wandered around to the places where I knew the lines were going to be really, really long the next, like, when everybody else got in. So I checked out Left 4 Dead 2, Diablo 3, Bayonetta. I kind of looked at that for a little while. Borderlands I looked at. So I played for a little while on each of them just to kind of get as much as I could in before everybody else flooded the floor, and the lines were really long and everything else, so...
What about you, Jim? What was the thing that you wanted to see? Like, as soon as those doors opened, you wanted to run?
Ironically, the one I wanted to see the most was Halo 3 ODST, which I'm sad to say I never did get my hands on. I didn't know what to expect from the panels, and figured that at some point, since I was attending the panel and that I had all weekend to check it out, that I would get my hands on it for at least 30 minutes. And I didn't. I missed my opportunity. I guess I really honestly wasn't that excited about getting my hands on Borderlands. I figured my time would come there. Again, missed opportunity. But probably behind Halo 3 ODST, I guess, I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if there were going to be some surprise entries, some new things that we hadn't seen before, which that's what we ended up with in a few cases. I don't think I was particularly interested in too much. It was like the kid in the candy store. You know, I was had my hands in every jar I could get them in.
Definitely.
What about you?
I pretty much made a beeline for Diablo 3. I mean, I know that's a game that, regardless of if I played it today or 3 years from now, I would buy it and play it, but playing it here and getting a chance to was absolutely worth it, if for nothing else. That game is just going to be so much fun. So much of my life is going to be sucked away by that game, and it's fine. I'm looking forward to that day. I got a chance to play the monk class, which is just awesome, being the, you know, this was, I think, posted earlier, but they have the seven palm or five palm, whatever it is, exploding heart technique, which is awesome to see in action. It literally is like you hit a guy three times and you watch them move a little bit and you see their like heart displays over them, you see the heart beating fast, and then it explodes, like the enemy just explodes in this red shower. That was very satisfying to see.
A very saturated red shower. Yeah.
And Mike would be very proud to know I did actually play Diablo 3, and I did enjoy it. I was the monk class for a little while just because I wanted to check it out and see it. I did enjoy Diablo 3, so there you go.
There's also fun exploding Care Bears. The other game that I kind of went towards, I was hoping actually I'd get a chance to play like ODST and Borderlands. Never did, but you know, I was kind of saving those for later. But I played Avatar the game, which I just, it's one of those cases of they have built and they've created a very good first person shooter. I don't know if it's going to be like a great, like in terms of story. Like, I think at this point for that game to really succeed, it's going to be very dependent upon the story and how the story unfolds, because playing it, it's gorgeous. I mean, and Jim was the one who told me about this, that they're using the same engine that they used with Far Cry 2. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as I played through it, it just, my jaw almost dropped when I switched out weapons to a flamethrower, and like the flame actually looked like flame. It would burn the plants. They have like these entirely destructible environments because you're in this jungle setting. They have all these little things in place where you can, it's kind of remind me of Metroid Prime, where you can actually scan the animals and get data about them and things of that nature. They have little things like that put into place. So, I mean, it controls well, it looks great. I think what's more or less going to determine the success of that is going to be how the story comes out of it. It's intended to be a prequel to the movie. And so, I mean, that'll be interesting to see. I mean, regardless of how the movie does and what people think of the movie, hopefully the game will be a little bit, you know, fair on its own and be separated at least a little bit.
Yeah. Real quick, not to detract what Jason just said, that's actually a third-person shooter, not first.
That's it, first-person again. I keep messing up. Yeah, it is third-person. I apologize.
Yeah, for me, I really wanted to get my hands on Borderlands, but I got to see it the day before. So I wanted to... Definitely Diablo 3 was kind of up on my list of things to see, but... also, what I really wanted to see was Brink, which Jim and I actually did go check out. Unfortunately, it wasn't a hands-on demo, but a developer demo of it. And the big news, it was kind of cool because the first big news for us out of the show was big co-op news and the fact that the game was going to be 8-player co-op.
Drop in, drop out.
Yeah, drop in, drop out to co-op. So that was a nice surprise. And, you know, the demo, the best way to describe the game, you know, it's a first-person action game that has kind of like, not platforming elements, but like...
Mirror's Edge.
Yeah, I use the term Mirror's Edge. I guess there needs to be a buzzword for this, whatever it's going to be called. But it's kind of like Mirror's Edge in that you can climb up things and you can slide under things. And it all takes place in the first-person viewpoint. And they call it the smart system. And basically all you do is you hold a button, and as you're running towards something, it's contextual. If you're kind of running and heading up, it'll jump over it. Or if you're kind of pushing down, it'll slide you underneath. And in the heat of battle, it just seems to work really well, and it just adds a variety to things. We saw him kind of popping off a few shots and then running for the next thing of cover and sliding into cover. There was a point where he got a mission kind of on the fly to go around and flank these guys, and he just quick went around the side, jumped up and climbed up some boxes and leapt over a fence and came around and did this kind of like flanking maneuver, and it was just really cool. Mm-hmm. But the game, you're going to play as a persistent character that you'll earn experience and you'll be able to upgrade and customize and unlock things through the whole thing, and you know, keep that locally or bring it online and play with friends. And I thought it looked gorgeous. It's kind of got this unique style to it. It's kind of like Crackdown meets Gears of War meets I don't know. It's
Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, it's
you know, well, the style of it, yes, but the control and gameplay. But I didn't get my hands on Borderlands either, but it kind of reminded me of Borderlands, not with the specific art style of it, but just the environments and the interaction.
The part that was demoed to us was kind of in a shipping yards, and it was kind of gritty and stuff, but I know we've seen some kind of screens of like the big expansive city and the blues and the whites and the stuff there, so I was definitely really impressed with what we saw.
To clarify, there's no actually sticky cover system either. It's isn't it called the Smart system?
Smart, yeah,
which is a good name for it, because when he was sliding into cover, it wouldn't actually stick him to any particular surface. It would just slide him kind of right where he needed to be to get out of harm's way and gather himself together and get ready for another barrage.
And I know that I kind of mentioned this. I mean, I saw part of the demo when they were going through it, and mentioned both Jim and Nick persistently throughout all this, and they're like, "Yeah, that just looks great." I was like, "I don't know." I think part of it though is there's two things with it. One is it kind of has that same sort of post-apocalyptic that sort of feels saturated right now between Borderlands, Rage, this.
But it's not a post-apocalyptic.
It's doing its own thing, but at least within that level, within the context that they had, like the character creation was, you could be police, like this police force, or you could be the Renegades, and the Renegades could have things like tire armor or things like that. I mean, like when I saw that, I was kind of feeling like this is feeling a little bit Mad Maxy, which isn't bad, you know, necessarily to put against it. But you see that, and then I think with the control system, watching it play it, I think is the other thing. Is if I had a chance to actually play it and use that system, I think it'd be different. But you just see it, and to me, it just kind of felt like, yes, 8-player drop-in co-op, which is awesome. But it's how does it actually play? How does it actually work? Because yeah, they know the game, they know how to control those things. And when you're actually there and you're actually doing it, does it play the same way?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's pretty far off yet. It's second quarter of next year's release date, so.
Darn.
So most likely nothing gets released in the second quarter of a year in terms of games, so that means fall next year.
I know we're kind of running long on this subject than the one before, but I also wanted to say I was really impressed. What set it apart for me, too, that a lot of people tend to forget because they're so awed by the visuals and the smart system and the style of the game, but the picking your objectives on the fly is just really cool to me, and it's, I guess it's part of the smart system, but you can open a radial menu and it'll give you a number of objectives. I can't remember if it was 6 or 8. Yeah, I think it was 6. And each one had an experience point value and also had a consequence to the mission at hand. And you could do things like go around and blow open a door behind the enemy and let your AI flank them. There was, you know, all kinds of different things. You can interrogate people that were wounded, and sometimes if you did them in the right sequence, you'd really get the optimum amount of experience out of the way. But also, while you're playing co-op, which objectives you choose have an impact on what objectives are available to everyone else, and that's really neat. It's a whole other way to choose your path. It looks like it's gonna be pretty linear, but to be able to everyone be delegated jobs without having to do it, you know, out of a space where there's nothing scripted for you at all. I just was really impressed.
All right, so after that, you know, we got our hands on a ton of games, but we're going to kind of try and focus on some of the co-op stuff. And I know Kat got a chance to play kind of an interesting game. We classified it as co-op, and it's kind of one of those hybrid MMO co-op kind of games, kind of like maybe like Guild Wars or something like that. And that was Dofus 2.0.
Yeah, Dofus.
Dofus.
Yeah, the guys were this French company. They were actually very nice. One of the guys said he didn't speak English very well, though he spoke better English than most of the people on the internet. So he was very cool, though. And he walked me through it until I broke their computer, and then...
And she really did break their computer.
She really did.
Yeah, but basically Dofus is you get to build your own character. It's kind of a furries kind of a game, but not really. You get different classes that do different things. You get like a summoner class that'll give you like a bunch of little animals that you can summon. You get this cool little bird. It was called a tofu bird. Like, that's the one that I got to see. And what it would do is run up and attack your enemy and then run really far away so nobody could touch it. And it would just keep doing that, like, every single turn. And it would whittle down their life while you either stayed out of the way or you flanked them and, you know, started attacking from behind. It was actually pretty cool. And basically, the MMO aspect, you can see people in the community and you can buy things from them. It's completely community-driven economy, so you have to buy weapons from people in the game. But if you want to actually play co-op, the limit is 4, I think, in the actual game. And then it turns into a tactic-style game when you have 4 people in it and you start to engage enemies. So it's kind of a hybrid, but it was very cool. It was very free. Nice free flash game that I managed to break, so...
And so that was from Uncomma Studios, and or Solutions, I guess is their name. Yeah. But they have another game coming out to Xbox Live Arcade called Islands of Wakfu. And that's a 2-player co-op game, and you got to see that as well.
Yes, I did, actually. And that one was behind closed doors. It was kind of neat. Like, they're really very much in the beta stage with that one. We couldn't even find it on the floor. Like, we had to actually talk to the guys to figure out where it was. And basically, you're a character. The way the game played was, it really reminded me of Legend of Mana on the PlayStation 1, where you're a character that just walks around and you beat the crap out of things. But it had some really interesting features, like being able to teleport behind your enemy. Like, one of your joysticks will control your teleporting, and with the push of a button, you can teleport anywhere on the screen. So when you're being flanked by something, you can automatically teleport way, like, either really out of the way to kind of recover, gain your balance, whatever, or you can teleport directly behind your enemy and just start pounding on them. And it was pretty effective. The 2-player co-op works. Your character can transform into a dragon. So if you play 2-player co-op, one player is the human character and the other one is the dragon, who can fly and shoot like fireballs. I think they were blue. And just, I don't know, it seemed very, very interesting. You had to really work together, so it was local co-op only. But you could basically make it so that you could play through the entire game just walking almost in a straight line if you coordinated it correctly.
And how many players? Cool.
2. Yep. And one player had to be the dragon and one player had to be the human, so I don't think you could switch back and forth on the fly.
You said that they could turn into a dragon. When you're playing 2 players, you're stuck
as a dragon. Yeah, when you're playing 2 players, one player is the dragon and one player is the human being. When you're playing 1 player, that character can switch back and forth on the fly just by hitting Y. Mm-hmm. So if you get in a sticky spot, you can fly away and start shooting fireballs from really far away. So, and that was really helpful, actually. But basically, Wakfu, I had to ask him about this, but it's basically their type of mana. I know there's another game called Wakfu, but I don't think they're related. I'm pretty sure it's just kind of a general word that they use for it. Maybe it's French exclusive, I'm not really sure, but it was very original. It was very cool to watch. And they said that would be out next summer sometime, but they're still working out some of the bugs and adding some cutscenes and stuff, so...
Cool.
Yeah.
Did anybody... You said you got to play Left 4 Dead 2, Kat,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did.
Did you get to play it?
I didn't get my hands on it.
No. And did you?
I pretty much know what to expect of that, so... Yeah.
I don't think you do. I really think that they're undercutting themselves with how much has really changed in the game.
Let me ask, though. 4-player co-op?
Yes.
You get to kill zombies?
Yes.
I know what I'm getting.
they've really added things to the experience to mix things up. Some of the newer zombies, like the jockey, can really split up. The jockey and the guy that charges you.
Charger.
Yeah. They really can. They're made to like split up the group. So even if you're working really well together, out of nowhere, like the jockey will come, they'll hop on your guy, and you can't control it. It's basically like if you ever played a game where like you get like in a smoke cloud, you get confused, and the controls get reversed and stuff. Like that's like what the jockey does to you.
Yeah, it reminded me of Headcrabs from Half-Life. Like absolutely.
Yeah, that's what it kind of almost looks like, because you can't see yourself. It's just kind of like latched over you. And
wasn't there a weapon truck 2 Seeds of Evil that did that as well?
Might have been. I don't know if I ever played that. Yeah. So those things there, I think, really change a lot of the dynamic. There's a lot of new weapons. I mean, gun-wise, I think there's probably... six or eight new ones.
Yeah,
the new the new pistol is really cool. It's a Desert Eagle that has like the flashlight right on it. There's a new machine gun. There's a different sniper rifle.
That's cool.
Then the melee weapons. There's a ton of melee weapons. Of course, the coolest one's the katana because you can slice the people apart or the zombies apart. I have an interesting, a little funny story with that towards the end. But then there's also, you can pick up a guitar. I was beating the heads off zombies with a guitar, frying pans, crowbars. There just seems to be a lot more variety. Like, you know how, like, in Left 4 Dead 1, it was always like, you almost knew what the next set of weapons were going to be, right? You knew, like, okay, right now we have the Uzi and we have the single shot shotgun or whatever. It's like, oh, we can't wait to get to level 3 in this map so we can get the, you know, the assault rifle and the fast. It's a lot more mixed up now and a lot more random. It doesn't seem to be like there's just, like, the stockpiles there and it's kind of, like, predetermined, like, you might just find that the new assault rifle laying around with some ammo. You won't find that whole group again. And it kind of really changes the dynamic of the game.
So does it know that they've improved the AI director to be like that? That the AI director says, okay, I'm not going to give you a cache of guns. I'm just randomly going to stick a gun here that you may not find.
Yeah.
The AI director really, really sticks it to you if you start doing really well. Like, the group that I was playing with, all of us were going in a pretty much straight line, and we got hit by a charger and a jockey at the same time. So we were all split up, like, completely. You can actually take different routes. So two people ended up going down one route. One person got stuck at the top of a hill and died, and we couldn't get back up to help him. And it kind of sucked. But the other person went off on their own, and, of course, that was me, and I ended up saying hi to the witch. And I totally walked on her, too. Like, you couldn't see her as well as the original one.
That was weird. Holy shit.
All right, so if the microphone didn't pick it up, as soon as, Kat said I walked on the witch, there was like this shriek sound.
It was a car screeching, but that was pretty freaky.
I'm glad you picked out what that was, because I couldn't sleep tonight.
Okay. Yeah, but she was like in the bushes, like you couldn't see her, and it was like, you shouldn't startle the witch. I'm like, well, tell me where she is next time. Like, yeah, I couldn't tell him where she was.
You brought up a good point. The level design seems a lot different because like the environments seem a lot more open. So the level that was on display was the Dark Carnival level, and you start on a highway that's just been, you know, destroyed. There's bodies everywhere, there's cars everywhere, and you're trying to navigate your way through. So you kind of tend to get split up, and then it goes into a old motel, and there's different. You can go through some of the rooms and kind of find your way out in different areas. So it was pretty creepy, but the one thing I wanted to say before is I was talking to one of the developers while I was there and got a pretty interesting piece of information about the clowns in the Dark Carnival. And the clowns in the level, they're not a special infected. They are just a normal zombie, but they have squeaky shoes. And the squeaky shoes, the noise from them attracts other zombies. So you'll hear the squeaky zombie coming. And behind him will be a whole trail of other zombies that are following him because he's making noise. And it's just adding to the experience. And I was watching some people play, and somebody had the katana, and they had chopped the clown zombie, and he kind of like slumped down in the corner. But he got up, and he got up without an arm. He just started squeaking back towards it. And I was like, man, that is freaky. That's the freakiest thing I've seen.
So likely people with clown phobia is not the game for them.
Yeah. Wow. So, and one other quick thing. One thing that they added that I haven't seen talked about too much is the bodies take damage and start to tear apart. So if you shoot them, their skin will like split and start bleeding and it'll grow. And
that's
more
gross.
They really wanted it. It's more violent for sure. Like the pipe bomb
it's
now.
Mine.
The pipe bomb now. You know how before you would throw it, they come in and be like a big cloud of red. Now they just dismember and they fly everywhere and it's a lot more brutal.
You find like body parts. Like we saw one of them blew up in the little motel area. Like it was in this little swimming pool, an empty swimming pool. And I went upstairs to go find some weapons and there were body parts in the rooms like upstairs.
Did either of you have any experience with the dynamic weather? Because I understand the director also controls the weather now.
I didn't see any change in the weather in the build I played.
That's what they've been saying.
I got to play it both on PC and 360, and they were both solid. And I got to say, the 360 version I thought looked not better than the PC version, but it looked better than the previous Left 4 Dead. They really seemed to clean it up, and it looked a lot sharper.
Yeah.
So. All right, so let's move on here. I said we're going to do a half-hour podcast, and we're probably we're at 25 minutes. So let's keep going through some of the stuff we saw.
Please let's keep going. I don't want to go back to my room yet.
We don't want this experience to ever end, really.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the Dead Space Extraction.
Okay.
So Kat and I went to a Dead Space Extraction event on Friday night. And that was pretty cool because we got there a little bit early and we got to sit down and told the team a bit about co-op and our thoughts on it. And they told us their thoughts on co-op and the producer, I don't have his name off the top of my head, but he showed us a ton of things on how they designed little intricacies in the game for co-op. Things like there was shared health, right? If you would pick it up, it benefits both players. You could share ammo, like you could give ammo back and forth between players. The puzzles in the game, you would alternate between the players.
It puts different, like one player one would be in control for like a third of the level, and then player two would be in control for another third of the level. And
there's parts. So it's an on-rail shooter, but there's parts where it gives full control over where you can look, and it'll alternate between the players for that. Like it's constantly going back and forth. It's got drop in and drop out. Anytime you can, someone can come in, add another cursor, and they can drop right back out, which is pretty nice. And besides the story mode, which should take about 10 hours to play, there's a challenges mode, and both of those can be can be played in co-op as well. And a challenge is kind of like you're trying to get a high score on a map, and it's throwing more and more enemies at you, and there's ways to get multipliers and stuff like that. I thought it was pretty cool how we worked together in that, like, the stasis. If you've played Dead Space on 360 or PS3, there's the stasis move, which kind of, like, slows down an enemy. So what we found ourselves doing is, like, one of us would cast stasis while the other one was cutting them up. And we would just kind of, like, alternate between that. And it seemed to work really well. So I was really impressed with it. I mean, besides it, being on the Wii, it was a little low res, but it looked pretty good. And there was some freaky stuff we saw, for sure.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job using the visuals that they could, and they had a lot more weapons.
I think they said they added three. There's three new weapons that they added to the game, as well as if you looked at any of the Dead Space animated comic books, those were all going to be included on the disc to play. So
it was pretty cool, and the guys were really nice about it, and they really liked co-op. So
So that's always a good thing.
I think I went to the Borderlands panel while you guys were doing that.
That's right. And
there's been a lot covered on that, and there wasn't necessarily anything really new. I know Nick was kind of excited, like, oh, they're gonna reveal something new. So the new thing that they revealed was this monster called Skagzilla, and I mean, while cool, I think more or less it was just them sort of demoing the game. Now those guys, I think, after watching the panel and seeing the game played like there, this is really, I mean, and Nick can say a little bit more about it, this is going to be a really fun game, and there's a lot of humor injected into that game. There is, I can't remember the guy's name, it was like Scooter or something like that, who talks like real Southern kind of redneck kind of accent, and
he talks like Jim. Sorry,
he's right here. Y'all better don't leave me alone now.
That's how he talks. And he was just going on it, like, I mean, he said stuff like, "Yeah, I want you to find my friend Lucky so that I might take care of him, and by take care of him, I mean kill him dead." And I mean, so there's a lot, like, they just had a ton of fun with that. Even during the presentation, they were having a lot of fun, and even though it was only Skagzilla that they revealed, it was cool watching it and seeing it kind of in action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I got to play Borderlands, so I'll give my quick impressions of it. Got to play that on Thursday, and they had it set up with four-player co-op. Randy Pitchford, who was the president of Gearbox, was there playing with everybody, and he was just like, like a little kid playing. He was so excited. And even though, he's been working on the game for 3 years, you can see, like, he was just having a blast with it. I mean, he's one of the most passionate guys in the industry. And
during the panel, I mean, like, people were playing, and like, he was sitting there next to him. He wasn't even playing, but he was telling the guy, he was like, "Do this, no, go over there, do this. Why aren't you shooting that guy?" I mean, seriously, yeah. Into the game.
Yeah. got to play some co-op in it, and it's kind of a little bit of an arcadey shooter. It does some really fun things where, like, as you're shooting guys, there's these like 8-bit graphic style hit points coming off of them, and the damage you're doing and stuff like that. There's so many stats and things on the way. I, unfortunately, because it was kind of like a big event, didn't get to like look at all the stats and details of the weapons, but there's so much and there's so many pieces and components to the weapons that, that change it. Like, you know, you could just have like a normal gun, but then you might find like an acid add-on for it, and then you might find a scope for that too. Like a scope, I should say, it's version of it. So there's all these pieces to every weapon in the game that just slightly changes it and adds an effect to it that makes them like so unique.
Did he talk about that? I mean, in the panel he said that basically the weapons are generated by an artificial intelligence, yeah, sort of a thing that that generates them, and he spat out the number again.
Yeah, it's like 600,000 was what they said, but
he said 160 million guns in the panel. 160
so maybe,
million
so maybe
guns.
They've added more.
Maybe he's just tossing out numbers, and because they were even asked, like, did you count all those? And we're like, absolutely.
Well, I had actually joked with him, because they were saying, they did say that, you know, they do have some ideas for DLC. I was like, are you going to add more guns? Right? It's like, he's like, no, you know, we have some other ideas.
Guns just rain from the sky.
But, you know, it's fun, and it definitely promoted co-op. There's things like you can heal. Everyone kind of has a passive healing ability, so you can heal your friends. You'll go down, you'll get taken down, and you go down on one knee, and there's kind of a little mini game you got to do to fight to survive. But you can also, someone could come over and revive you and bring you back into battle. It scales the enemies and difficulties depending on how many people are playing there. And there's certain enemies like that we were fighting, and like everyone had to be working to bring it down because you were just going to get owned. So with that, with all the weapons, the items and stuff to collect, the experience system, the leveling system and stuff, it's going to be a pretty addictive game, I can see already. And it looks gorgeous. The style of it is just really... really slick.
One of the funniest things that happened during the demo was that a piece of loot dropped from an enemy, and one of the demo guys ran up and grabbed the loot before they could show what it was. And Randy was like, did you just ninja loot?
Yeah, one of my favorite things, back to the humor, was the medic class. I don't know if that's the only class I got to play. But you can snipe heal your friends, like stand at the top of the hill and shoot them with healing. And if you throw grenades or something, like the enemies around whoever you're throwing the healing grenade at, they'll be like hurt, but your buddy will be healed.
That's cool. I didn't get to see that.
That's the only thing I got to do in the game, but it was hilarious. It was built brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
Mike Newell, or I can't remember his name, I think that said, who's the producer.
Yeah, he was the one I interviewed.
He was saying that too during the panel. It was like, he watched today. They weren't expecting this either. He's like, he watched today a guy, the tank, you know, forget his name, but the tank was up against someone and just absorbing a bunch of the damage, fired a rocket at him, hit his friend. His friend got healed, and the enemy took rocket damage. He was like, I had no idea we could do that.
Yeah, well, that's probably the thing, like generating the weapon that has the abilities and stuff. So yeah, it's definitely one of those things where like you'll play it, you can play it so many times, and you're never going to see the same thing twice. Yeah. So
I got to see it running in vertical split screen, and it looked really good. I watched it for a little while, snapped a couple pictures, and there's no slowdown, and it looked comfortable. You know, a lot of people don't like vertical split screen, but with wide screens, it's a little bit better. Did we ever confirm if it was split screen online?
We did not get a chance to do that.
Okay. No.
So, but it's definitely four player co-op, drop in, drop out. Hopefully, like you said, two player split screen. Hopefully, it's two player split screen online as well. I will have to send an email about that. Moving on.
So that was just Friday.
Yeah.
If you can
actually, there's
it.
More. I mean, I didn't even talk about Halo 3 ODST firefight mode, which I got to play. On Thursday, in fact, I forgot about that.
There's quite a few things too that on Thursday. I mean, like we had an interview. I had an interview with Telltale. There's so much stuff going on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably not going to have time to talk about all the single player stuff that we had seen and kind of off those offbeat things. But real quick, Halo 3 ODST firefight mode. I guess they did unveil that there's going to be shipping with 10 maps for firefight. My hands-on impressions with it's definitely, it does, I mean, it feels like Halo, but it's definitely tweaked up enough to feel like a different game. You move a lot slower, you don't jump as far. The firefight mode is pretty hectic because the way it does it, how it the dropships bring in the enemies, it's not like just having them spawn. You have to, like, almost take cover when the dropships come in because the dropships are shooting you, too.
Hmm.
And, you know, we'd be like, okay, here comes the next wave, and I would just try and go and get on a turret, but that would put me out in the open, and I got owned so many times doing that. And so I would rip the turret off, but if you rip the turret off, then it's not unlimited ammo anymore. It just becomes like a gun. And so there's definitely a lot of trade-offs and stuff. And since there's no regenerating health, basically, like Halo had, you have to go find health packs, basically. So the map, at least that I played, had kind of like a bunker in the back that you could run to and kind of recharge and stuff between rounds. And the other big change is the visor. If you hit the X button in this, it brings up this visor, and it'll outline enemies it knows that are there for you. So even if guys are kind of... If you had seen them and they went around the corner, it knows they went around the corner, and you can kind of get the jump on them, because there's no radar anymore. The radar that from Halo 3 and Halo 2 is gone and places this visor. So it's definitely different enough that I think... you know, it's a different game. It's not just Halo 3 with a coat of paint. And I had a lot of fun with it. The scoring's a lot of fun, too.
Stupid question. Did anybody get to play as Sergeant Johnson?
Yes.
Yeah. Did he have the visor?
Yeah, I guess so.
His cigar just brought up a new little menu.
The cigar's...
Continuity issue.
So that's pretty much Thursday and Friday. Saturday, Kat, you got to see Fairy Tale Fights.
I did.
I know there's been a game that you've been wanting to get your hands on for a while.
It was a lot of fun. We only got to play two-player. I played the Xbox version on Saturday. I played the PS3 version the day before. The games are identical. There was a little bit of a visual difference, but they let me know that the version that they had brought to PAX for the PS3 was not as up to date as the Xbox one, but they're on par, so they're basically the same game. But basically, the game is hysterical. Like, everything you do is funny, no matter what. I mean, you can pick up any weapon in the game, you can throw potions at people, or you can drink them. Like, there's a love potion, that's the only one I really got to play with, but if you throw it on the ground, it leaves a pool of hearts, something or other, but it'll stun your enemies. But if you drink it, it makes you invincible. You turn pink and start running at people, and it's just... It's goofy, but it's a lot of platforming, a lot of fun. You can skate on the blood. There's an achievement for that. Just skating in circles. Like, we've just held the X button and rotated the stick and just skated for, like, 5 minutes. But the liquid system was really nice. The slicing, dynamic slicing, if you slice in one direction, it'll show the cut on the screen. Like, the way
it
that...
It kind of has that, like, picture-in-picture thing going on.
And if you do... he showed me some of the special attacks, which... If you do them correctly, you have a little gauge in the corner, and if you trigger it correctly, it'll give you, like, 30 seconds to just dice the crap out of whatever is around you. So if you have, like, a ton of enemies, it'll give a little picture-in-picture thing, and you just sit there and swing for several minutes, just destroying everything. Huge puddles of blood. It was weird, but it was awesome.
Yeah, it's very over-the-top from what... Jim and I had played it a little bit, too, on Friday, and the one thing that impressed me was that there's going to be 100 weapons in the game.
Yeah.
And
you can pick up anything.
Yeah, I killed someone with a swordfish. It was just like, it's just ridiculous.
It's a little bit like Castle Crashers in that sense.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's a good comparison.
Yeah,
so
you pick up coins and you can go to, like, Wishing Wells. So you throw the coins in and it gives you something back. I got the chainsaw.
Ooh,
that was fun. Like, you just walk around swinging it and everything dies. It's brutal.
There's not a whole lot better than seeing a naked emperor skating around on blood and bludgeoning people with a trash can and a stick.
Yeah, it's just... It's so over the top and ridiculous. I think the one thing that might hurt... I've heard it from a couple of other journalists. They were like, you know, it's really fun, but it almost seems like it should be a downloadable title or something like that. Like, they were kind of surprised that it was a $60 title. And hopefully it wasn't just that... It might have just been a case of, like, a poor demo. Because, like, they only had one level to show, right?
On the Xbox version, he wasn't allowed to show me any levels, but he went through the list. They go through several different stories, like, really popular stories, but, like, I looked at the Jack and the Beanstalk one. There were 3 or 4 levels based just on Jack and the Beanstalk. Like, you go through different areas from the book, supposedly. I mean, it's all platformed, but you'll cover a lot of the stories. I think there were, like...
So does that what it goes through the 4 characters' stories? Is that what it was?
It seemed like there were more than that. I feel like I saw a couple of other ones. I can't pick them out right off the top of my head, but it felt like there were a whole lot of... different things to do, and each level looked really, really different, so it wasn't like you're just copy pasting every single area or anything like that. It looked really good.
The thing though is that they made the comment while we were there that it was very much supposed to be a casual game. When Nick, you asked him about if there was any type of penalty, like a loss of coins or anything like that for dying. And there really is. You lose one of your weapons if you're holding two, or the one you had, and you go back to your fist if you only had one weapon. But they wanted to make sure we understood this is a casual title. You just don't see casual titles in retail anymore because they don't have multiplayer modes. They don't have survival modes. I personally would have preferred to have seen it in maybe like episodic DLC because I might have been more inclined to buy it at $10 per section, you know, and just take it a bit at a time. I don't know that I would pay $60 for it. That's just my opinion. That's not a review or anything.
Yeah, I heard a rumor too that they're not sure if it is going to be a $60 title.
Yeah, they might leave the price point lower. So, like Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts started at like $35 or $40 or something like that, and that makes a lot of sense. Like if they did that, I would be
a $40 title for that. I would think it's worth it. The $60 title, I think they might have a hard sell.
They did mention that there was a solid 10 hours of gameplay in just the regular difficulties, and if you chose hard, you'd have up to 16.
Yeah, and it's 4-player co-op, drop in, drop out. Online and offline.
Online and offline, they told me. So
I got to see a cutscene, and that actually looked really funny as well. So it's going to have its own style, for sure.
Yeah, it was definitely
cool. So let's go to some of the other co-op stuff. You guys both played Pixel Junk Shooter today, right?
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about it yet, so why don't you tell me?
It's fun. and I gotta write something up later about this. It is, Pixel Junk has always sort of done their own really neat games, and even if I know, like, Pixel Junk Eden, I think that's one of the first co-op reviews I wrote. Yeah. And the co-op in that really just, didn't go well with the game, even though the game itself was really unique and fun. Co-op in this works really well, assuming your partner doesn't shoot all the miners, which mine did. Jim, no, that's the one that we have to save. Stop, no, Jim.
No, it's not.
Jim. I think Jim just got gun happy. But it took us a little while to kind of figure out, because I thought, you look at some things and I guess this is something that just they didn't show there, but, I'd always been led to believe that if you see a pool of water, you can suck up the pool of water and, go dump it somewhere. And that may be something that you unlock later, because in this, all you could do is basically shoot, like, a gun and grab...
the miners.
Grab the miners. And you could do, like, this if you... I think it's, like, the left analog. If you just do a quick circle with it, your ship spins, and it can, like... there's, like, coins that you collect for killing enemies, and it'll just suck up all the coins near you. Here's something interesting, though. With the water, like, if there's a waterfall, you can shoot the water, and it actually directs the flow of the water. So, in, like, one part, we caused this waterfall to happen, and we, it was falling down into this pit of lava, but we actually, where we were was sort of to the right of where the water had to go. So we kind of sat on one side of the water, fired our guns, it directed the water to where it had to go, caused lava to harden up over there, and then we were able to shoot through it and get to the other miners. I mean, it's definitely fully co-op. I wasn't able to do it quite in time, but if your partner gets in trouble, if they get overheated, which is sort of the way that you die, if you get too close to lava or if you fall into the lava, you can actually use the same grappler that you used to save the miners to grab your partner and try and quickly grab and dump them into some water to cool them off so they don't die.
It's got a real simple duality to it. As you've seen from all the screens and the videos, you got the blue water, the orange lava, and it doesn't get much simpler than that. You get into the water to reduce the heat, which is kind of like healing yourself up. When you get too close to the lava, you'll see that it heats up your ship and you got a little meter. And
so can you, if you, destroy, a wrong section of rock, does it the lava, fly down and kill all the miners, or...?
We didn't have that happen to us, fortunately. I'm shooting Jim a look right now.
I would have loved to have seen it.
Yeah. In the level that we played, it was supposed to be, the first level of the game, so it was really just kind of teaching you how to play. I'm sure later on there's going to be more puzzles and things like that that they kind of develop and put into place. But, it for a co-op title, hands down, when it gets released, it's... definitely one of those things to buy, because I'm sure it's going to be the same price point that their other ones have, $10. And I mean, it's just, it was really nice to look at. Like, it's yeah, a kind of a nice, I mean, Jim said a duality, but also kind of a nice, just simple style. And the water itself was just
really incredible. When you're shooting through the water stream, you're not, I mean, I don't want to undermine what Jason was saying. You're directing the flow of the water, but you're actually kind of spreading it out. It'd be just like if you're running a faucet and splashing your hand through
yeah,
it. It's still falling where it was. You're just splashing out across.
So
I don't know that we'd ever see a thing where you could accidentally shoot out the rocks, but then again, we only did one level. But what you will see is things like where you'll have to shoot out rocks to direct lava to an area and then harden it with water and then blast through it. It could get really complicated. It's a lot less casual than it looks.
Huh. Well, that sounds cool. So the other Sony game that you saw was SOCOM, right? The PS3 one or the PSP one?
The PSP one.
The PSP one, okay.
All right, I'll make it quick. We confirmed that, of course, we knew it was 4-player co-op campaign. We confirmed that not only can you make custom missions, which I don't know exactly what that entailed because that part wasn't playable. You can also get online and do the versus, and then the co-op campaign will be ad hoc, which is local for the PSP, or infrastructure, which is online at a wireless location. The controls are pretty much the same as the first two Fireteam Bravos, which is good. I won't go into depth on them now, but a new thing that I noticed was if you were locked onto an enemy with your right trigger and you sat still and they didn't know you were there, there's a red bracket around them and a little dot where you're aiming, basically. That dot will jump up to their head so that if you kind of sneak up on them unawares without having to actually zoom in and manually aim, you can use that. It takes about 5 seconds and it'll pop up. It's kind of just a neat little thing. It made it feel like that you were more elite. And also it was kind of neat because you didn't have to zoom in. You could see all of the action. I was in a room where there was a fireplace. I was up on some stairs. There was a sentry downstairs. I sat at the top of the stairs and was able to cap him in the head without having to lose all that screen space. I got to see all the action as it unfolded, which was really neat.
You lost the precision. You lost the iron sights, Jim.
It doesn't have iron sights. When you zoom in, it just gives you crosshairs.
So, Chat, you saw Spyborgs today. Was that today's
Spyborgs? I did, yeah. Actually, I ran into most of the co-op games I played were actually pretty casual, but on the floor, those were the ones with the shortest lines, so that's what I kind of went for.
Spyborgs, I don't know how to react to that.
Yeah, poor Spyborgs was all by itself over there, and this kid was standing next to me, and he was trying to play, but you had to play co-op, so I stood next to him and I was playing it, and he picked the girl, which was a little weird. I guess not really weird, but I was standing there and he picked the girl anyway. And I was the big brood guy and we were walking around. And if we hit the buttons at the same, like the attack buttons at the same time, they would cooperate. Like the characters on the screen would actually cooperate to attack, or they'd get a more powerful attack, or you could chain them a little bit better. And otherwise it was just a very general brawler. It was a lot of fun. Pointing at the screen, I wasn't even sure what that actually did. It didn't do anything in the demo that I noticed, but if you shook the controllers, you could... Oh, I don't remember what you did. I know there were prompts for it for different things, but I also played Pokemon Rumble, which is weird. Like, I've never heard of a brawler Pokemon game, but you would play as Pokemon and you'd run around...
What, this Pokemon Stadium?
No, not even like that. Like, it wasn't
yeah,
even...
Yeah, that was like a
no,
player,
like,
wasn't it?
Like, Ninja Turtles type brawler.
Oh, like side-scroller?
Yeah, it was insane. So, I was playing that, and then the Nintendo guy next to me, like, he was trying to walk me through it, and he's like, you know what, I'm just gonna, you know, jump on, because I don't know if I was... I seemed like I was ignoring him, because I was having fun. I'm not sure, but...
down back there, trying to play the game.
No, but we were playing co-op, and we went through that. It was actually a lot of fun. Like, I didn't even know that was a co-op title.
I haven't even heard of it, so
yeah,
we'll have to...
I guess
the Pokemon at some point get tired of taking turns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
No, but it was just kind of fun, just another brawler. But I went over there to the Nintendo booth, and, like, all of the stuff that was held up was, like, Metroid Prime Trilogy, which came out 2 weeks ago. It's like...
Yeah.
You guys are standing in line for this? I'm going to play Pokemon, see ya.
Well, Jim and I played at the Nintendo booth this morning, the Super Mario Brothers Wii game.
Yeah, that was actually full when I went over there, but...
Yeah, so that they had it playable 4-player co-op on the show floor. And it's Mario Brothers with, you know,
it's good.
It does a couple different things. Like Jim enjoyed jumping on people's heads to jump up the higher spots.
Hey, you know what? The lady actually stood there in front of us and said, I don't know if you'd already moved on, Nick, but she said, you know, most people move on because the levels, you moved upwards.
The one you had played, it was vertical, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she said, you know, most people leave all the other guys behind. You're really playing this co-op.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Here's my card.
Yeah, so you had played that one. I had actually played one that looked more like that traditional first, you know, World 1-1 in Mario. And you get to play as Mario, Luigi, or a blue or a gold toad kind of character. I guess there's going to be, like, suits in it again that kind of was introduced with, I think, Mario Brothers 3, maybe? It's the raccoon suit. Right, so there's a propeller suit, which you kind of put on, and you kind of, you have to shake the controller to gear up the propeller to fly up. And then there's a penguin suit, but I didn't get to see the penguin suit.
No.
I was kind of bummed about that. But yeah, it was pretty fun. It was kind of casual. Like, if you died, you shook the controller to spawn back in. Everyone shared coins as a collective, so once everyone got 100 coins, everyone would get the free life. It did a couple cool things. They're saying it's going to come out this holiday. I don't know if it is. Every question I asked PR, they were like, well, it might. It might not. I'm like, is it going to have online play? Well, not right now, but it might. It's like, how many levels does it have? Well, right now it has like 12, but it might have 16. It was just kind of like, you don't know what it's going to have by now. It might make holiday. They might really be pushing for it. Maybe they just don't have the latest info here, you know, since it is being developed in Japan.
That was another title that we even mentioned to each other that, you know, regardless of what their answer was about how many levels it seemed almost like it should be a DLC title, a WiiWare, actually. But apparently it's going to be full retail, right?
Yeah.
And I'll probably get it one way or the other because it's, you know, it's a cute, fun, serviceable game. My wife will probably enjoy it. And if not her, then the kids who come over every once in a while will. But it's very simple, very casual, but very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the theme for this show. And actually, I had kind of a question about other press shows. Like, these guys were... they weren't too keen about giving too many details about a lot of things. I'm not sure if they didn't have them or if they didn't want to.
It depends, like, I think, on who you talk, like, in terms of the development studio or whatever. I don't know if, Nick, you already have this on the list. There's three games I wanted to mention that all had co-op. It was, two of them are the XNA Dream Build Play, and then the moment's the League of Legends, and I'll try and breeze through these as quick as possible, okay, too. League of Legends, I kind of posted about that earlier today. Yes, it's five-player team-based co-ops, or, you know, competitive co-op, so we have a group of five against a group of five. And the one thing I'm just going to say is, yes, it's free, it looks like a lot of fun, and it is, like, I didn't get a chance to actually play it, but watching it being played, there's a strong sense of team and co-op. And talking with the Stephen Snow, the vice president of productions there, I mean, these guys also really love co-op, and they really want to do more co-op, and I said this in their article, is that they can't say what modes there will or will not be, but they really want to do certain things, and that if the community tells them to, I mean, we always talk about how the community has a voice, and this is absolutely the case here. If the community wants a co-op campaign, if the community wants pure, just straight PvE co-op modes, they will respond to that, and they will put those kinds of things in place. For the Dream Build Play, I saw Max Blastronaut, which actually won second place in the Dream Build Play contest, which is kind of cool. They're it's four-player co-op, and it's an interesting game. I mean, I only played part of it, but it's set up as, like, you're this little miner-type guy on a planet, and you run around the planet similar to you do with, like, Super Stardust. So if you have another person playing with you, there's enemies that pop up, and it's not like a twin stick shooter, but it's like they pop up and you brawl them, like you just punch them a bunch. But you can also do it, but one person can sort of jump up off the planet, and so then they shoot down. Basically, they can support you by shooting down while you're kind of punching. So there was plenty of times, like, I was playing with the PR guy there, and the PR guy would be on the planet punching guys, and I see a guy running up behind him, and I just shoot him and take him out before he gets to him. So, you know, that's cool. Four-player co-op game, won second prize. Game that didn't make the top three, but is definitely interesting and I think is worth checking out, is called Soul Survivor. And I talked a lot with the guy who actually did the sort of technical the design and art side for it. It's a co-op turret defense game, and the co-op campaign in it basically is that you have these different generals that allow you access to different turrets and different special abilities. And so in the co-op campaign, one person, it's two-player co-op, one person controls placement of the turrets, and the other person has the abilities to use. And so, you know, there's kind of, as we were playing, it became obvious that, you know, the combinations that you pick between the two play a significant role, because, you know, there's like cloaked enemies that can only be taken out by turrets that see cloaked enemies. I didn't have any, and so I had to rely upon the guy I was playing with to use his special abilities to take out those enemies before they hit the base. So, I mean, it was kind of fun. It was nice to see a different take on the tower defense sort of genre. But in a lot of those cases, too, I mean, the guys talked a lot. The Stephen Snow guy, I mean, really great guy. And there was so much that we sat in with that. It was like an hour-long conversation. And he was in there, and he taught me. He's like, hey, so here's this thing. And he talks about it, and he says, oh, well, you can't print that. I probably shouldn't have told you that, but I just wanted to let you know.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on who you talk to. If you get PR or if you get a developer or whatever. You know, PAX is a consumer show. Most of the stuff that they were showing here is pretty close to release. Though, you know, there is a couple things that is a ways out, but most of those, like for instance, Brink, you couldn't actually play. The Diablo 3 probably not even going to come out next year, and people were playing it. So I think that's more of a confidence thing that Blizzard has. I mean, if it's arrogance or
teasing,
yeah, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's rightfully deserved. But
no, I mean, in describing this to like my coworkers and stuff before I came out here, it's true. E3, CES are set up as sort of like trade shows, and this is about the community. It's about the people. That's why they have panels. That's why they have tabletop gaming and all these kinds of other stuff. Yeah, it's definitely a different environment.
Yeah, if you've never been to PAX, I mean, yeah, gaming is definitely the center focus of it, but it's on a whole, it's geek culture.
Yeah.
If you went to, none of you guys were there, but then the concerts last night, Will Wheaton apparently has been deemed the Minister of Geek Affairs. He came out and he read this whole address, and he gave Jonathan Colton a trophy, the D20 of, I don't remember what he called it, and he kind of went through this whole list of geekdom. And, you know, everyone's cheering and stuff, and it just, you know, it's kind of the whole tone of the show. Everyone's just comfortable with everybody else. You know, they have some commonality to talk about or agree on, you know, whether it's gaming or comics or tabletop gaming or, you know, just about anything.
Yeah, for a lot of the communities, it's a major mecca, basically, for geek communities. Yeah. I mean, COG is here. I've been hanging out with a lot of Destructoid as much as...
There are a lot of other different groups of people that get together in a huge, you know, get-togethers. Like, you know, there are a lot of church functions that I go to. You got sports, just a lot of different things. This is the first time I've seen so many people in one area and there not be some type of conflict. I'm not talking about fist fighting or anything like that, but I mean, that's just natural for 65,000 people to be together. Somebody gets pissed off at somebody else. Everybody was cool with everyone here. Yeah. Everybody.
I saw one, like, minor scuffle. Like, August was actually, Artemis on the site, was standing in line for something, and he was talking about wanting to try the PSP Go, and this little guy next to him was like, why? Sony sucks, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, 30 seconds later, he realized what he said, and he acted like he felt really ashamed about it, and he's like, I'm sorry about the way I reacted. It's like...
Yeah, I mean, you would think with, you know, like Jim said, there are 65 or 70,000 people here. Everyone in tight quarters rubbing up against each other trying to get their hands on games.
I'm giving each other con SARS.
Yeah, okay. I'm still infected, by the way. Y'all stick away.
You would think something would happen, but it generally hasn't. So let's try and wrap this up. Some quick things. Jim, Jason, and I played some Beatles Rock Band today. We were accompanied by Rob, Mike B, and Suave Peanut from the the Calling It Gamers forums, and we rocked the house with "I Want to Hold Your Hand."
I think we did pretty good.
It was pretty fun. I did the little Beatles thing going.
No, I tried to do that.
So that was fun. If you like Beatles music, you're gonna love it. The crowd was always singing along. I think everybody knows at least a dozen or so Beatles songs, you know, from commercials and everything else, even if you didn't grow up.
That is, I mean, like, Rock Band to me is just sort of, it's been great. Like, I kind of love the Rock Band for the party atmosphere, but it's sort of run its course to some degree. And getting up there and playing Beatles Rock Band, and you see, like, the crowd, like, these are songs everybody knows.
Yeah.
Everybody sings along too, and it just is even more so. I can see playing this with a huge group of folks.
Yeah, it was definitely cool. I took a peek in at like a Rock Band, you know, just to see. And it's Rock Band, but the one kind of cool thing they did is that the bars are Lego pieces. So that's a show
they had to do.
Yeah,
that.
So I thought that was kind of cool. But I mean, beyond that,
you know, Mark just gave Guitar Hero 5 a 5 out of 5 on the co-op review. And I thought, man, you know, that might be a leg up for Guitar Hero on Rock Band. You know, everybody likes to compare them all the time. Beatles Rock Band's going to give it a good run for its money. There's a lot of energy there.
Yeah.
And I got to say, you know, my wife's not a particular fan of the Beatles, but she is a fan of these music games. She likes to have fun with them. And, you know, our Guitar Hero controllers work with Rock Band games. I'm going to get this game.
Well, the biggest thing that they added to Beatles Rock Band is the fact that you can sing harmony parts. You can have, I think you can have 4 microphones hooked up, and everyone gets their own little bar and can sing with everybody else. So that was kind of cool. What do we have? 5 of us playing at a time. Rob and Suave did vocals by themselves, and we did the instruments. So that's kind of cool. So you can get more people involved now playing. So.
And they even announced our band. Give it up for...
Billy and the Co-opta Crew.
Billy and the Co-opta Crew.
So that was cool. And then the other last co-op thing that I have from today was a Dawn of War 2 panel for their new game mode called The Last Stand. I had posted that article today, and they unveiled that. Basically, it's a survival mode, kind of like Gears of War Horde mode and stuff like that, but it has a few interesting things on its own. Your character in it is persistent, so you'll earn experience, and as you go up levels, you unlock items that you can bring with you in your loadout. There's 3 characters you can choose from. There's an orc, orc mech boy, an elder, farseer, and the space marine. And each one has their own kind of unique abilities and stuff. Like we saw some of the later level items. The space marine got a dreadnought as kind of like he couldn't control it, but he could drop it in and it just kind of went around and kicked the crap out of things. And the Farseer had this really big magic blast that was pretty impressive. And the ways of enemies weren't just the Tyranids. They showed actually, and I never played the first Dawn of War enough to know the difference, but apparently one of the races that came in was something from the first Dawn of War.
What was it?
They were human kind of things.
Demons? Was it like Chaos Space Marine?
Yeah, it might have been that.
Yeah, black armor.
They were like blackish and gray. Yeah. And someone actually asked a question like, well, you have them there. Why aren't they in the campaign now and stuff? So, you know, the guy that gave the panel was really entertaining because that's it. The people kept asking and berating him questions of things. And it's the guy's like, well... maybe, you know, like I think people need to understand when they're asking these kind of questions, you know, they're really specific. They're like, well, if you do this and then you do this, would you do this? And it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, they might, you know, if you ask enough maybe questions, of course they're going to reply with a maybe.
Sky's the limit when you have unlimited resources, time and energy
exactly.
to do it.
Exactly. So, you know, long story short, it looked really impressive. It's really strong scoring based. There's even replayability, so there's 20 waves to get through. Once you get to wave 20, you can keep playing to earn experience, or you can actually basically turn in your character, reset to level 1, and then you get a unique item and like a little star on your name. And then and that item allows you to increase the score even further, and you can do that 3 times. So then when you can get to level 20 again, turn it in, get another star, get another unique item. The trade-off with that is you only have a set amount of item spots. For your character to bring on the mission, but again, it's at the expense of increasing your score.
So if sorry to remember, but if there's only three characters, right? And I think you mentioned this to me earlier that it has to be three player co-op.
Yeah.
So everyone, so like, you know, you log on, you're going to be the Forester, I'm going to be the Space Marine.
No, you can have three Space Marines if you want.
Okay, that's what I was going to wonder, is that if everyone takes a certain race and a certain character, because I the next question follow-up was, how do the abilities work together, or do they work together? Co-op abilities?
I don't think there's any co-op abilities. Well, there is. He gave an example of one where, like, I guess one of the Farseer... No, it was one that works... moves helps regenerate power faster, and then so if you would equip that thing, then the Farseer could cast spells more often, like, so if you were near each other.
So there would be a benefit then to using all three of them as opposed to everyone being a Space Marine.
Exactly. So and then every fourth wave is kind of like a boss battle wave where I'll throw some of the special characters. They said they mixed up with some interesting things, and the one that they showed, they kind of let out of the hat was, I think it was wave 16 is a doppelganger battle, and the three bosses that come are your three characters with the same items equipped and stuff. And then the guy was like, some people luck out and they can beat it pretty fast. They said there's been times that they stalemated and sat there for half an hour trying to you know, get through it. So pretty interesting. It's going to be free. It's going to be out I think the first or second week of October. So looking forward to that, to expanding that game some more. Now we just need expansion packs. But they did say, someone asked a question about co-op campaigns, if they were looking at adding more players to it, and they said that they definitely were. So maybe for the expansion we might see more than two player co-op on that.
That'd be awesome.
Alright, so this half hour podcast is now up to an hour and 15 minutes. So let's wrap it up and let's talk about, you know, co-op, not co-op, anything. What was your favorite part of the show? We'll start with you, Kat.
Bayonetta. I played Bayonetta and then Darkstalkers? Darksiders. And those two games were incredible.
Is it because Bayonetta has a naked chick?
Absolutely.
Yes.
The cutscenes were great.
Confirmed.
It has a lot of elements from Devil May Cry that I really appreciated, including the taunts and the way all of the weapons work, and everything was just a lot of fun. Otherwise, the Saboteur was great. It was visually appealing. It had a lot of interesting cover system, a really interesting nav system. It was just a lot of fun. So a lot of the single-player games were interesting as well. I kind of tried to play a little bit of everything, so I'm sure I've missed some stuff, but those are the ones that stand out the most to me. So,
Jim?
I have a bit of a complicated answer. Imagine that.
Your favorite is Rogue Warrior, right?
Yeah. I love that. Oh, God. There's two sides to it. There's what I got my hands on and what I didn't. What I got my hands on, my favorite of the show was Army of Two. Now, of course, I didn't get my hands on Firefight or Borderlands or Brink. I mean, all those look really good, too. But what I actually got to play, Army of Two looks great. What I couldn't have gotten my hands on, there were two live demos that for games that I really want, just based on what I've seen, and I hope that things continue to develop the way that they have so far, and that is Splinter Cell Conviction. That looks better and better each time I see it. They haven't announced anything official on co-op, but I get the feeling that they may, especially with the last two titles having co-op. The other one is Red Dead Redemption. Also, no word on co-op, whether it has it or not. I will probably have that game unless Kat goes in there and breaks their studio or something.
On my way.
Please no.
Game wise, actually, my answer is going to be the independent games. I was really, really happy to see there were far more independent games this year at PAX. I mean, like, they do a PAX 10 that's an indie thing. But this year, I mean, aside from the PAX 10, there were just a ton of independent...
There's a ton of games in general.
Yeah.
There was a lot of games this year.
And it wasn't all just, like, EA, Capcom, Blizzard. It was, you know, the Twisted Pixel guys were there. There was next to them... I don't know, but I can't remember the developer or whatever. But again, it's things like that where you see a bunch of in diffuse if I'm saying that correctly, I mean, all these kinds of things where it's the independent developers out there getting their games out. And it's just great to see that many sort of new entries and new people getting into the game space. I kind of agree with Jim in terms of what I actually got my hands on for co-op wise and what I got to play. Army of Two just went from something that was completely off my radar to I'm really excited for playing that. Yeah. Excuse me, really excited for playing that. Single player wise, I don't know. I mean, I knew I was going to love it before I ever picked it up, but Uncharted 2, I had a demo on the floor.
Yeah, we got our hands on that, and that was impressive.
Playing that, I brought a smile to my face to be playing Nathan Drake again.
Did you get to play the scene where you run down kind of like the alley and the truck? I don't think I've seen something like that in a while in a game. And you just like laugh from his reactions and stuff. There's so much
character
to that game.
It's absolutely like Indiana Jones, and it just shows that that's one of their influences because his reactions to what he does, it's just awesome.
If anything sells a PS3 to me, it's going to be that game. I got my hands on it and I loved it.
Yeah, along the lines of the character thing, I also forgot something called Death Spank. Which was just announced. It was
Tim Schafer's.
No, Ron Gilbert.
Ron Gilbert, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and they just showed us kind of a vague demo, but it was basically Monkey Island meets Diablo. It was beautiful. It had so much humor, and it was so rich and full of character. I can't wait to see what they do with it.
You know, Behemoth had their new game there, too. I don't think any of us got the chance to grab it. Did you, really?
Yeah, I played it the first day.
And?
They only had a short portion of it. It was this little versus thing where you were basically jumping on each other's heads, but it was interesting. Like, the way the game played, it was like a mix between Castle Crashers and Alien Hominid, just the way everything looked. You got customizable Behemoth characters, which I probably spent more time with than actually playing it. Like, you got to cycle through a bunch of different body shapes, and then you got to change the face, so I had this really retarded-looking character. It was brilliant. But I had a lot of fun with that.
I guess for me, Borderlands definitely... It's kind of my game of show. I had to stop playing it because I was like, I want this game too much, and I'm just, it's a tease to keep playing it. I know I'm going to put a lot of hours into it, and it's because of like the things like the item collection and stuff like that. And I don't know if because of that, Diablo 3 and a little game called Torchlight stood out as like other games that I really want now, because both of those games are, you know, they're both action RPGs. So Diablo 3, you should know about. I really like the monk class and everything about that was that game, just the style of it, the controls. They tweaked up so many things.
I think it's funny that Kat, you and I, Jimmy didn't play, right?
No, I did not.
But the three of us, we all picked the monk class to play.
Yeah, well, it was... I did it because it was probably the most different from what was there before. You know, I guess it was... I can't think of the class from Diablo 2 that it was kind of...
Assassin?
Like, the Assassin, yeah. But it's so much... It's a completely... Not a different game, but each character... And this is what the rep had said, that each character has their own unique thing. And the monk has, like, a combo system. And the way he explained it was, like... You know, each combo might have three parts, but you can go, like, part one from this combo to part two of this combo to part three of that one. And you can mix and match them to do different things. And it was just really entertaining, and, you know, and just exploding 65 guys at once into giant things of blood. It's too satisfying to not enjoy. But
the one thing I just wanted to interject real quick, I remember when we posted the latest Monk class a while ago, I think one of our users said something about how they're just so limited in the class that they have, and then you can't pick female characters. When I hopped on and had the character selection,
it's either or,
except for the monk. The monk can only be male, but they're still not done announcing classes, which means there's probably going to be a female-only class. Something. And, you know, we don't know how many other classes are going to announce. So, yeah, I mean, for people out there, you can choose male or female for most of the ones in there. Yeah. So you could have female witch doctors, female barbarians, and stuff like that.
Yeah. So Torchlight was another game that really surprised me. It was by a company called Runic Games, and the CEO, Max Schaefer, actually was a co-designer of Diablo 1. He was from... he moved on to Flagship Studios and now at Runic Games. They built this game in 11 months. It's gorgeous. I mean, it's really, really pretty. It's a Diablo clone. but it does a lot of its own little things. Randomized dungeons, lots of quests and stuff. It's kind of a mix between fantasy and that modern fantasy where, you know, it's not just spells and bows and swords, but it's also guns and robotics and like
steampunky.
Yeah. It had a ton of style to it. It had a neat thing like you have a pet, you have a dog or a cat with you, and that dog or cat can assist in your fighting, or you can give it some loot, you send it back to town and sell your stuff for you, and you know, just a lot of little things that people always nag about in those kind of games. It took care of, and it's just a very casual kind of title, but I was really impressed with it. It's only gonna be $20. It's coming out in like 2 or 3 weeks, I believe. But again, it's all about item collection and customizing. You know, your swords have slots in it for runes to tweak and add this ability and that ability and all this other kind of stuff. I asked the developer to, you know, I was like, hey, can you show me some of the later stuff? He's like, yeah, let's go cheat. And he went down and started going through some of the later levels and unlocked all these abilities. And I was playing as the alchemist, who's like a wizard class. And one of his later abilities is like a laser palm. Like, he basically like holds out his palm and has a laser beam and goes like this and was just chopping things up. It was just like, wow, that's really cool. So, yeah, it was a nice surprise to see something like that. Kind of, you know, not that they're an independent developer, but a small developer coming out this cool thing. And then once they're it's shipped. Oh, the other great thing about it, it's shipping with mod tools built into it, right in the executable to create lots of stuff. So,
just for anybody who was listening and didn't catch a wind of it, maybe we didn't get anything up on the site. Mass Effect 2 is there. Lost Planet 2. We saw Sirius Sam HD.
Yeah, we missed that. Divinity 2 we were
Divinity
both 2. With.
What else did we see? We saw Battlefield Bad Company 2. All these games looked really good. They were coming along nice. They some of them may not be, you know, revolutionary, but they all played really well. Yeah, presented really well.
I had an interview with Dr. Greg Shushtek, I think is his last name, from BioWare on Dragon Age. Talked with him a bit.
That's right.
Talked with, for Mass Effect, or talked with the lead writer on some stuff with that. Got an interesting co-op quote out of him. We saw some hardware. I got some hands-on with some headphones. A really interesting Dolby technology for chat. Jim, you had seen some mice and keyboards from a company called SteelSeries.
Mm-hmm. PSP Go for
PSP
me.
Go, yeah, we both got our hands on that and it kind of surprised us.
We could probably do another podcast with everything saw there.
Just so much.
Yeah.
And so definitely also check out Colony of Gamers, because I know that they were posting a lot of stuff up there.
Yeah, definitely check out colonyofgamers.com.
Yeah.
Lots of videos and good stuff over there. I mean, between all of us, I mean, there had to be 10 of us total covering the show, you know, the four of us. And
I'm still not sure we covered it all.
I went back to the hall after the panel today, and there was like an hour, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get my hands on Scribblenauts and this and this. And there were still lines, and I didn't get, you know, I still didn't get to see everything I wanted to see. I mean, I had Battlefield Bad Company 2. I don't even think I
got my hands on it.
Where was that?
It was in the big booth that said Battlefield Bad Company 2. It was a huge booth with only one door on one side.
I don't think I even saw that, and I know I wanted to play it.
They were running a live demo outside the door for a while, but you know, for the whole first half of Friday, you could go in.
I want to play Brutal Legend. I want to play the Savage.
Oh, I played that one too.
Yeah,
that was fun.
So,
Assassin's Creed was not playable, but they had
a demo for demo. That. Yeah. So,
and Ieko, Jason Cooper, he really seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Also, for anybody who may have only used our website for the Twitter feeds, go back through a whole week of feeds for JLove55, TXS Hurricane, ShadowCat, Rain, REGN, Cat with a K, and BA Penguin to catch all the updates. We live tweeted all of the panels, I believe, that we were in.
Except for me, that doesn't have a smartphone. But I complained about Seattle a lot. So, well, I didn't even mean to complain about Seattle a lot. I just broke Seattle.
All right, so with Seattle broken, and I think all of our bodies broken from exhaustion, this has been the Co-opticast for September 6, 2009. Thanks for listening, and it's good meeting all you guys and having everybody here.
Yeah.
Had fun.
That was the best part of it, hands down.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about the best games, but the best part of the experience was meeting the people.
Excellent. and it kind of sucked, but the other person went off on their own, and of course that was me, and I ended up saying hi to the witch.